on comprehensive health care, freedom of choice regarding doctor or hospital, no more than $200 a year for prescription drugs, taking on the drug companies and the insurance companies. Moving to Medicare for all is the way to go.
Just some of the candidates speaking last night in Houston at the historically black college, Texas Southern University, in their third major Democratic debate. That last person, of course, was Senator Bernie Sanders. Before that, Indiana South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. I want to thank our guests for being with us. Cesar Espinosa, Executive Director of FIEL, a Houston-based nonprofit that helps undocumented members of the Latino community in Houston. Julian Brave Noisecat, director of the Green New Deal Strategy at the think tank Data for Progress, and Rashad Robinson, president of Color of Change. And that does it for our show. Today, we will be covering Greta Thunberg with many others outside the White House for this Friday for Future, the protest around climate change that's been taking place around the globe. To go to our hour on Greta Thunberg, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
WHFR has brand new buttons, and we want you to have one for free. We are going old school with this promotion. Simply send us a postcard. Yeah, a real-life postcard with your name and address to WHFR Attention Buttons, 5101 Evergreen Road, Dearborn, Michigan, 48128. Let us know if you like blue or black better.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the WHFR Journal here on the station Making Waves 89.3 on your FM dial and of course online at WHFR.FM. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw for today's edition of the program, and we have a couple of great segments coming up for you that we do hope that you'll stick around. In just a few minutes, Susan McGraw will be speaking with Gary McElroy and Linda Brandt from the English Department and Biology Departments here at Henry Ford College, respectively, but as disparate as those two academic subjects seem, collaborating on the HFC Climate Forum, which will be taking place 1 week from today, September 20th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Susan McGraw will be talking to them, and you'll get a lot more details about all of the activities taking place 1 week from today. And then after that, we'll welcome back one of our wonderful good friends here at WHFR, Ralph Valdez, the director of the Dearborn Community Arts Council, to talk about the exhibition Inspired by 2.0. That is going to be opening up this evening with the opening reception taking place at the Pajeski Gallery at the Dearborn Community and Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue just west of Greenfield. So we do hope you'll stick around for both of those coming up a little bit later on in the program. Right now, we also want to mention just a few other things going on in and around campus over the next few days and for next week. Of course, now that we're back in full swing with the fall semester, Welcome Back Days takes place next week here at the Henry Ford College campus with all sorts of activities. You can find out information about them at hfcc.edu. But another event taking place on Monday morning we want to let you know about. HFC is going to be hosting a public forum with the Michigan Department of Treasury on lifetime financial literacy. Earlier this month, State Treasurer Rachel Eubanks announced Michiganders, state agencies, community partners, and stakeholders were embarking upon a statewide conversation about the role of financial literacy and what it means for shaping Michigan's future and making our state a home for opportunity. And as part of that, a State of Michigan Financial Literacy Forum is scheduled for Monday at 10 a.m. here on the HFC campus. It's going to take place at the Welcome Center, which is on the north end of campus, and it's going to give an opportunity to engage in conversation with experts and share resources and best practices related to financial literacy. Now, the registration for this event technically ended about an hour ago. They said, please register no later than noon on Friday, September 13th. However, just in case, you know, they do have limited space, but just in case there are opportunities to attend, we want to give you that information and let you know that it's free. It's, you know, you can attend absolutely free of charge, and just need to contact the folks at the Welcome Center community rooms here on the main campus of Henry Ford College for that event coming up on Monday. It begins at 10 o'clock and lasts just a couple of hours until noon. It'll include financial literacy stage of life panel discussion, which will be facilitated by State Treasurer Rachel Eubanks. And for more details, you can contact TreasCom at Michigan.gov. That's TreasCom at Michigan.gov. I'm Alan Mazurek. Susan McGraw is going to be back just in just a few moments at after a couple of announcements here, and we'll talk about the Climate Forum taking place a week from today here on the HFC campus. Thanks for being here for the WHFR Journal.
From now until September 26th, the Sisson Gallery at Henry Ford College is having an album cover art exhibition, a window on world culture and art history. As part of this event, there will be live performances throughout the month of September. Wednesday, September 11th, punk rock band The Zots will play at 4:30 p.m. Friday the 13th at 8 p.m., the prog rock band Chosen by Fate perform. Tuesday, the 17th, hear the blues of Howard Glazer and Harmonica Shaw. And on the 18th, listen to the Americana songs of Joe Jabber. The Sisson Gallery is located in the Fine Arts Center building at Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn. It is open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 4:30 p.m. For more information, call 313-845-6485 or sglazer@hfcc.edu. This exhibition and its performances are free to the public. See you there.
Welcome. This is the WHFR Journal. And occasionally on this show, you know, things take a turn for the very dramatic, very somber, very intense. And we've got one of those for you today. Let's put it that way. Susan McGraw here, and welcome. Our topic of discussion at this time deals with the concept of climate change. Don't touch that dial. No. This is stuff, of course, as we educated folk know, and that should be everybody in our audience, that we need to talk about, we need to hear about, and most importantly, we need to do something about. Henry Ford College is doing just that, along with many, many other communities, states, and countries around the globe. So let's get into it. I certainly claim not to be an expert of any sort, but I'm passionate and involved and interested, like hopefully our listeners are as well. Let's bring our experts in, our experts on the forum, and in their own way, experts on this subject. So we'll get into that. Gary McElroy is here from the English department at Henry Ford College, Linda Brandt from the biology department. So we've got two approaches, but certainly the same mission and the same cause. We're talking about the Henry Ford College Climate Forum, taking place Friday, September 20th. Yes, a week from today. And we are excited to get you involved in some form or another. This could be purely education, this could be purely informational, or it could be the catalyst to cause you, your friends, your family members, your coworkers to make real change. Gary and Linda, we're excited to jump in here. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. Gary, I remember we talked months and months, maybe even a year practically ago, about doing something to sort of jump into what was kind of being called sort of a start of a movement for September 20th and for this concept of a climate forum in other parts of the country. How did you really officially hear about this whole thing, and what prompted your interest to get us all involved at the college?
Well, exactly. Susan and Linda and a number of people on campus have been concerned about general environmental things as well as, or I should say especially climate change. And I was really motivated by what started in Europe about a year ago, August. We're just past that now. In Switzerland, of all places, where a young schoolgirl named Greta Thunberg did a one-girl strike for climate in Stockholm in front of the legislative building. And one girl, one sign, Students Strike for Climate, built in a matter of weeks, months, to across Europe, across the Channel to England, across the ocean to the U.S., this worldwide uprising. And her point of view was, if I can go on, I don't want to hog this discussion at all.
Please do.
But like all school children, she went through a, you know, here's the environment, here are the problems we're facing. She was 8 years old. And she thought, climate is changing the world. It's going to make it uninhabitable. But nobody's doing anything. Why isn't this on TV? Why isn't this in the newspapers? Why isn't this all we're talking about? And that dissonance drove her to depression. And she struggled for a few years, had her own personal problems, and then decided at the age of 15, which was August 2018, that she could do something. She picked up a white piece of cardboard and wrote, School Strike for Climate. She asked a couple friends if they would join her. They declined. And she walked by herself to the legislator and sat down and pledged to be there every day because they were voting on a climate issue in a few weeks' time. And that sparked interest in local reporters and then countrywide reporters. And then all of a sudden, the whole European press couldn't get enough of her. So, as she says, if school children can get this much attention, what could all of us do if we united? And that's the motivation I had to talk with my colleagues and see if we couldn't have a forum to explore this issue further.
Linda Brandt in the biology department, you're here today sort of representing the science of all of this. We're not going to ask you a million hard questions. We're not going to try to have you change everybody's minds that are thinking right now, oh, more of this stuff. Just, ugh, so tired of hearing about all this. And oftentimes it's the little ones, the kids that have the, I don't want to say rose-colored glasses, but the ability to put aside all of the politics and all the yuck, you know, and actually just get to the root of the situation. And it sounds like that's what this young lady did. But just in a minute or so, why should we be concerned? Just very briefly, what's literally physically happening that's causing the need for all of this discussion?
Humans, so I say we, I was not obviously alive in the 1800s, but we humans have known since the 1800s that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. That name came about sometime in the 1800s, and meaning that it absorbs and then re-radiates infrared radiation, which is heat, thermal energy, back to the earth, holds the heat in the environment. It's somewhat like, although there are chemical reactions involved also, somewhat like at night you put a blanket on. It keeps you just the right temperature. You put a second blanket on, you get too warm. So carbon dioxide does the same in effect to the earth in the earth's atmosphere. We've known that since the 1800s. We also know that burning fossil fuels puts carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So we are taking carbon from one source, underground or under the oceans, in the earth, and putting it somewhere else in the atmosphere. If you take it out of one place and put it into another, it clearly is going down in one place, and there's more of it in another. So it's indisputable that humans are adding to the carbon dioxide that is in the environment. It is indisputable fact of science that carbon dioxide warms the earth. Therefore, humans are contributing to climate change, to global warming. People that say, oh, I acknowledge climate change is happening. It's been really hot this summer. I just don't think humans are contributing. Of course we are. We're putting it from the ground into the atmosphere. There's no disputing that. What I like to differentiate, and it seems to have helped people that I've spoken with who have that attitude that, oh, yes, I think it exists, but we're not doing it. You have to separate the science from the policy. They are two different things. The science cannot be debated. The science is factual. What you do with those facts, what you do with the fact that we are increasing the carbon level, is policy. And that can be debated. Some people think a carbon tax is the way to go. Some people don't want any kind of regulations because they're so anti-regulation. No, we can't have regulations. What you do with it is policy. That can be debated. But too many people conflate the two and think they can debate the science. No, the science is the science. It is factual. Can I make another analogy?
Please do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So science can tell us at what point in a pregnancy the fetal heartbeat starts. That is factual. Science can tell us when, during a pregnancy, the fetus has a fighting chance of living outside the mother. That is factual. What you do with those facts are policy and morals and values. So one person can say, oh, well, then it's okay to have an abortion at this point and not at this point. Another person can say, it's not ever okay to have an abortion. Those can be debated. But the fact of when the fetal heartbeat starts can't. So that's a perfect analogy to the facts of climate change can't be debated. They're facts. What you do with those facts can be.
A perfect analogy, and also both very controversial, certainly,
yes.
Issues. And that's,
why
I think,
that
where,
one.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. That's where I think things get pretty messy.
But
yeah.
The problem is, for the last 30 years, there has been this debate.
Mm-hmm.
Political debate, partly out of ignorance, but also partly out of self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Enron, for one, you know, the biggest oil company in the world, maybe the biggest company in the world at the time in the early 80s, their scientists knew what was happening, and they acted on it. They didn't tell us, but they built their rigs higher in the ocean. They started thinking of ways in which they were going to be able to mine for oil in the Arctic, or what was the Arctic. So there was a lot of disinformation out there. There's just no way around, you know, acknowledging that. And a lot of confusion. But so much so that it was a back and forth, and you know what our national politics are now. There's almost half on one side, half on another. So very little gets done. And so little has been done to combat or attempt to curtail our rising carbon emissions that they've been rising. They've been rising all those 30 years. And that's important because if it was 30 years ago, we could sort of sleep in, wake up at 9, then maybe start a paper drive. You know, we could do little things. But I think this moment, people around the world are realizing that, no, it takes dramatic action now. We have no more time. The UN said 12 years to reduce carbon by 50%, heading toward net carbon neutrality.
Gary McIlroy and Linda Brandt are joining us today. We're talking about climate change. We're talking about global warming, and we're leading all of this into an opportunity for both our students on campus, our staff, faculty members, administration, but also you to be a part of learning more and potentially contributing to, in a positive way, the concept of climate change. The event takes place Friday, September 20th, a week from today. It's here on our campus in the Forfa Auditorium at the Andy Mazzara Administrative Building from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. I'd like to talk more details about the event itself in just a little bit, but going back, Gary, to something that you just said, the idea of gun violence in America, the idea of domestic violence, hate crimes, national debt, who's going to pay for college? You know, those types of issues and debates, they rise and they fall, and they rise and they fall based on reactions often to an incident. This incident, as Linda said, has been happening for years and years and years and, you know, hundreds of years, and we just finally got to this 12-year thing. Do you think that some audience members, community members, Americans, people around the world are feeling like that's a dramatic tactic? What is the earth going to blow up in, if we don't do this? What's going to why did they have to put a date on it now? What's really going to change? What's going to be different if we just kind of try to do the little things, the paper drives, the things that you talked about doing 30 years ago? I'm playing devil's advocate, of course, but exactly. But there are those people out there.
Yes.
And so
yes.
What, as we do this countdown kind of a thing,
yes, I think it's a natural reaction to think, oh, 2 degrees warmer, that's great for us in Michigan.
Oh, and we also hear, but it was a really cold winter.
Right.
That winter was really cold.
Right.
It's the coldest day on record. How can we have global warming when these freezing temperatures are? And I know it's way more than that. But
yeah, what's key is the average temperatures,
yeah.
The temperature of the air, the temperature of the oceans. And it's not going to be the same all over. Some areas of the world are seeing the effects of climate change more dramatically than we are, perhaps, in Michigan. But it's the overall rise and the speed of that rise and the speed at which we're putting more carbon in the air. In fact, in the last 30 years, we've put over 50% of the current carbon output emissions in the atmosphere than the previous 150 years since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution.
Okay, why is that? What?
Growth.
Okay.
Growth. Countries developing, China. China contributes one-fourth of all CO2 emissions now. And they're just getting started.
Linda?
Our economy is a fossil fuel economy. The world economy is based on fossil fuels. And so that's one reason. That's the main reason that we've been pouring carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. This 12-year thing, I wish it never came up, because I've heard people like Rush Limbaugh, who have lots of followers, just totally ridicule the idea, because they say, oh, scientists are saying that the world is going to end in 12 years. Nobody ever said that. We have 10 to 12 years, like Gary said, to really, really start doing something and quit debating the policies and what we need to do. It's
yes,
clear what
science.
We need to do. The carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere in the 1800s and up until recently was in the 200s parts per million. 350 is probably a safe amount. We're at 415 right now.
Wow.
At the rate we are going, we are aiming for about 700 by the end of this century. I'm expecting my first grandchild in October. Mm. He will be 81 years old in the year 2100. By 2100, we will probably be, at the rate we're going, at 700 parts per million. To put that into perspective, most people have heard of the 5 mass extinctions on Earth. So these were hundreds of millions of years ago and millions of years ago. All 5 of those mass extinctions have been connected directly to increased carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere due to volcanic eruptions, but also due to things called flood basalts, where basalt seeped up through the earth and gases, including carbon dioxide and methane, seeped into the atmosphere. The worst one, 96% of marine life went extinct. Over 70% of land-based life went extinct, Permian extinction. The scary thing about that is that we are putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere at a faster rate than it was put into the atmosphere at that time. Gary mentioned the rate at which we're putting it in. We're not putting it into the amount that those extinctions had, but our rate is faster.
when we talk about making a difference, doing something, getting information out there, getting an electric car, getting, you know, changing mindset as well as physical events in our day-to-day lives. Everything we're talking about is pretty depressing.
It sure
is. I mean,
is.
I'm just going to call it like I'm feeling it, right? So we have the one extreme. It's not, you know, it's not true. It's not happening. I'm in denial. You know, then we have the other extreme. It's not going to help anything anyway, so I might as well go out the way I, you know, I want to by all of these whatever actions and so on. I'd like to think that a lot of us are kind of in the middle, you know, taking this very seriously, not necessarily feeling like we know what to do or how to contribute positively to this, how to make life changes and educate others so that your grandchild and my grandchild and all of our, you know, future generations can really have a fighting chance at this. So that's where something like this forum comes in, and that's where education comes in, certainly. You talked about things being policy. When I hear policy, I think politics, of course. It's a totally kind of related type of a thing here. And it's just very unfortunate that every 4 years it swings this way, it swings this way, it swings this way. But, and I guess swinging is something, but I haven't seen the kind of dent made in my adult lifetime. I don't care who's running the country. So this is an all hands on deck kind of a thing. And not just in America, as Gary mentioned, China being a huge contributor, but then you have people in America saying, well, let them fix it, you know. But this literally is a global, that's why it's called global warming and not China warming or Michigan, you know, that kind of a thing. So I know I'm saying things that you two already know, but just to confirm the level of importance, the level of intensity that change has to come, and the fact that every single person hearing our voices and way beyond can make a difference. You know, sometimes we're afraid of failure, so we just don't do anything. So I'm hoping that the people that are feeling that right now can be moved enough to flip over to the side of we can make a difference.
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that.
I think you're exactly right there. Are all things that we as individuals need to do. And I see things every day in my home that I say, oh, you know, why is that there? Why is this bit of plastic here? I didn't need to buy it. What this forum will introduce some of you to is some political organizations. One is called the Sunrise Movement. They were greatly responsible for the passage of the Green New Deal, or the passage of it, the introduction of it. It's up there now, formally introduced and ready to be debated. There's also an organization called Next Gen America that will be there, and that will be in one of our breakout sessions, talking to students about what they could do if they join that group. So there'll be speakers, Linda and others, for instance, doing the basic science of it. There will be some films, both all inspirational. And sometimes you do have to see it to believe it. Mm-hmm. The last film we're showing is called The Human Element, and it starts at about 1:40, and it will go to about 3, and it's in the K building, 14, room 14. That's on the lower level of the K building, room 14. It's a gorgeous movie. It is motivating. It is heartwarming. It's also alarming. It's directed by a professional photographer who goes to various places around the world that are facing the forefront of climate problems, flooded areas, fires. He talks to people, he takes their photos, and he puts it in perspective, but in a very non-threatening, very human sense. If I could just add this one thing, he says at the beginning of his film, and this leads to the title of his film, which is called The Human Element, he said, the ancients believed there were four elements: fire, water, earth, and air. And I thought, hearing that, but that's neat if we can go back there and stop worrying about some atomic particles and such. And he said he liked to think of it that way, and that's what his film does, considers fire, air, water, and earth. He says, but he thinks there's one more important element, and that's the human element. And we are currently affecting every one of those other elements. But we could, theoretically, optimistically, bring them in harmony again. And we should. We need to. We have to.
Yeah. Wow. That's very profound.
Can I add something that else please, that students can do?
Please do.
So the forum goes from 10 o'clock in the morning until sometime in the afternoon. And one of the things we're doing about 1 o'clock is participating. Actually, the college is registered as a participant in the movement called the Plant a Trillion Trees. Mm-hmm. And if we on Earth actually planted a trillion trees, it really would help in sequestering carbon dioxide. I realize that we have 7+ billion people on Earth. It means that every single person on Earth is going to have to plant more than one tree, which probably won't happen. But I just spoke with someone yesterday who just planted 100 trees, 100 pine seedlings in his property. And I thought, wow, so that takes care of, you know, some of us. But we are planting a tree probably about 1 o'clock on campus. And so it would be wonderful to have a number of people come. It's going to be about a 6-foot-tall tree. And that is one of the things that people can do. So there are some positive steps that people can take. Mm-hmm. I have found for myself that I can be really depressed about this, about climate change and about picturing the Earth in the year 2100 and 2050. They anticipate coral reefs could be gone. That can be really depressing. So it's easy for some people, ignorance is bliss, to not think about it. It's also known that knowledge can be a burden. And so for people to be in the middle, to be active and take part in trying to fix this, but not be depressed about it, I think I found for myself the best way to do it is to take part. Participate so that you know I'm doing what I can. Each of us can do something. And as far as the big steps that we need to take, transitioning the country to zero, to a net zero carbon, we need each person to really look at people you're going to vote for in 2020. And I'm not going to advocate for one candidate or another, but we need to really be educated about where people stand and what they intend to do. One person I will mention is Debbie Dingell, because she's the representative from here. And she is co-sponsor of a bill called the 100% Clean Economy Bill, which is actually leading us to clean energy, and it's going to be introduced in the House very soon. And so supporting someone like her who supports a bill like this, she part of the bill is to help the country transition to electric vehicles, which would also be good for Southeast Michigan economy. Mm-hmm. So I think educating yourself about the people for whom you will vote is one really big step that people can take that doesn't take a lot of effort.
Yes, let me just add the tree planting effort will proceed from the ACSS building, the building L.
The administration building.
The administration building.
We say building
to
L
the site,
for love, actually.
To the site, because we can't expect you just to show up at the site if you don't know. Unless you see big hole, you'll know. And a tree next to it.
That's funny. I love it with a shovel.
So if you're at the forum, you can just join us as we proceed to the site, or you can meet us at about 1 o'clock. When we will leave for the site.
And then after that, we go over to the K building, and that's when the screening of the human element
the
takes
human
place.
Element, right.
Okay. Let's back up to the very beginning of the day. And again, we're talking about a week from today. We're talking 10 a.m. till around 3 p.m. To be clear, we're expecting a lot of students. We're expecting a lot of people that normally come to this campus on a regular basis, but this is, in fact, open to the public.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So what should someone listening to us right now that's thinking, I want to check this out, what should they do in advance? Can they just show up? Should they register? What do you suggest?
Oh, we actually don't have a registration at this point. You come in, we will register you as you come in. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's no cost to this. We'll give you a program, show you who's speaking and when the films will be shown and the tree planting and such. So you just come. and we will give you the program. We'll sign you in, and you will immediately go to the auditorium, which is right off the lobby there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any reading you want to do. I would recommend books by Bill McKibben and David Wallace Wells. He writes a column on climate for the New York Magazine. Brilliant writers who have been at this for a long time. So anything climate related, daily articles in the Washington Post and the New York Times, almost daily, at least every other day, you're going to find an article about some climate phenomenon happening around the world somewhere. So you can go and just back search for those too.
You're also welcome to come not having done any background work. It's not a class. You won't be graded.
There won't be any tests.
I won't question you as you sit in the audience. But the speakers start at about 10:40. And there are actually
I consider myself a speaker.
Oh, yes, okay, that's right.
I'm doing an introduction.
Gary's doing the introduction. His welcome introduction. So that actually starts at 10. So there are five of us. Mm-hmm. And three of us, Gary, myself, and another biology instructor from our campus will be doing educational talks, and two professors from U of M Dearborn. So it's a bit of a collaborative effort mm-hmm. with U of M Dearborn also.
Mm-hmm. Very good. This is the WHFR Journal. Again, we've taken a serious turn often, and at some point, you know, during these shows, we talk about gallery exhibits and we talk about food fests and that kind of thing. But, you know, none of that's going to be very fun if we don't deal with this issue and with this opportunity here. Holding an event and hosting an event called the Climate Forum on our campus is just absolutely important.
And if I can just add, we welcome everyone. One of the speakers is bringing her 6-year-old. Mm-hmm. We want it to be welcoming. We want you to feel accepted and warm. There will be an opportunity to ask questions or make comments after the speakers are done in the morning. So you're welcome to come. It's not going to be overly intellectual or overly, you know, you're not going to find people talking down to you, but just mm-hmm. telling you what they know, more on a personal level than on a teacher-to-student level.
Nice. Nice. In addition, there will perhaps be students kind of coming in and going between classes. I'm sure they'll be respectful, of course, during a discussion.
Of course.
But if someone can only come for a portion, or maybe they can just come for the movie or whatever the case, that's okay.
Oh, think of it as an open house. Okay. I always tell my students, this is not an open house. You can't come when you want and leave when you want. But for this, you can.
Okay. Yeah.
Whenever you can come in, come in. If you have to leave, leave. It's open.
Yeah, good. And where, perhaps on our website here at the college, can someone acquire information including this agenda?
Yes, on our homepage, mm-hmm. if you scroll down to events, we're right there. There's a photo from the movie, The Human Element, and you'll find a little description and then the agenda as well.
Great.
So, right on our homepage.
Excellent. This, as we know, is coinciding with other events taking place around the nation, around the world, including, and we're not advocating students do this today, tomorrow, or any other day, but on Friday, September 20th, we're told, just like Greta herself, back, you know, when she took her stand, there will be a student walkout for climate change. What's that all about?
Well, it's something the students started a year ago. They simply walk out, depending on where they are or what their agenda is. They might meet in front of the legislative building. Mm-hmm. Everybody plans it differently. I know where I live in Ann Arbor, high school students are walking out. I don't know exactly what they have. I think there's a Washtenaw climate strike mm-hmm. that they might be participating
climate
in.
Climate strike, yeah, that's it.
Yes.
That's what they're calling it.
So if you come or if you participate in any way, you are part of a worldwide movement on the 20th. They've had two before. They've had one in March 15th and May 15th. So this is a third big movement that grows out of that movement started by that one little girl in Switzerland.
Yeah.
So you're not alone in this. Come and hold hands and we'll get through this together.
All right. Great information. So excited about this event. And hopefully this will be a springboard or even a starting point for some people to make whatever changes might be suggested, make logical changes or bigger changes within their workplace, their home environment, or you know, beyond that, social circles, et cetera. We know that here at Henry Ford College, we are always encouraging students to take stands and make a difference and fight for what they believe and so on. So this is an opportunity not only for them but others in the community to be a part of that. Or even, as Linda mentioned, if you don't want to do anything in advance, if you just want to sit in the back and just listen. And maybe you don't even want your friends to know that you came because they're thinking other things. You know, they're thinking that this is not, you know, like we talked about in the beginning. But every bit helps. And so doing something, if you can or cannot attend this event on next Friday, doing something to turn this around is what's gonna make a difference.
And if you find the whole topic just too depressing to think about, it really can be cheerful when you feel like you are doing something to help. So when we plant this tree, I've actually worked with facilities on campus, and we found a strip of land where there is plenty of room to plant more trees. So any student group or even an individual student who wants to plant a tree somewhere can plant one in that strip of land, and there's actually an irrigation system in that strip of land. So there's a lot of potential for things that people can do that will make you feel much better about the situation and that we do have hope.
Yeah, we're going to end on that note. It's always good to end on a note of hope, and we've just done that. So thank you, too, so much for your time today, as well as the hours and hours and days that you put into making this event a reality. We're looking forward to it, and I know it's not just the two of you, but take that back to the group, please. Our sincerest thanks and appreciation for moving this forward. To our passionate students, we again encourage you to participate in some way. I'd like to believe that most of you are already doing things, and let's keep that going, and let's keep getting the word out about this very, very ever important and potentially life changing topic and special event going on a week from today, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., starting in the Forfa Auditorium at the L Building, the Andy Mazar Administration Building, and we'll take it all the way to about 3 o'clock. We thank you for your time. Stay with us. We've got more to come right here on the WHFR Journal, and stay positive.
Hope Village Farmers Market has partnered with the Michigan Farmers Market Association, a nonprofit, member-based, statewide association on a mission to advance farmers markets to create a thriving marketplace for local food and farm products. For fresh local produce, vegan food, children's activities, beautiful gardens, yoga in the park, and more. Stop by Hope Village Farmers Market at 14150 Woodrow Wilson at Oakland Boulevard, Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m. Visit Facebook.com/MyHopeVillage for more information. Support your local farmers.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Technology Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. So grateful to have you along with us for this Friday afternoon and that tremendous segment about the Environmental Forum that is taking place here in the very near future, right?
It is. It's a week from today, as you heard, and just such an important event. So great to be able to have the two people most instrumental in making it happen, kind of bringing this global issue and global event to our campus and our community. So very proud of what my colleagues are doing, and hope you can participate in some way.
We look forward to it. Absolutely. Well, okay, let's switch gears a little bit and go away from you know, it's in humanity. You have this, you know, the like science of the world, but then you also have, you know, what makes humans human, which is the artistic element of the world. And we've brought in somebody here who can certainly elaborate on that other side of humanity.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that song, maybe you remember it from the old Coca-Cola advertisements, that whole, I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony and all that kind of stuff. I always think about that. I don't know why. When I think of Ralph Valdez, I think that song comes to my mind because that's, he's got the sort of the artsy side kind of set for us, but it really does dig way deeper than just standing in a room and looking at paintings or something. It's so much more than that. These are things that are speaking to us as individuals, to our souls, hopefully affecting us and affecting our community in a positive way. So, Ralph, I didn't mean for that to be your intro, but there it is. So glad you're here. Ralph,
welcome back to the WHFR Journal.
How's it's been that? A little while, so we're glad you're back.
Thank you. I'm very pleased and proud to be here. That was a great introduction because I do feel that kind of holding hands sense of community with a lot of the work that we do here at the Pajeski Art Gallery and with as being the director of the Dearborn Community Arts Council.
Yeah, well, we're so glad you feel that way because we certainly
It's always
feel
the, that, the ultimate question, which hat is Ralph wearing today?
Because he is wearing
obviously
a hat, so that's
in Concert of Colors, we talked to him in one context,
Dearborn Homecoming.
We talked to him in another, and in this case, we're talking about the Pajeski Gallery, right?
Yeah, yes. I'm so happy to be part of Dearborn in that way, but you're right, I do seem to find myself wearing a lot of different hats doing a lot of different projects, and they're all very rewarding and fulfilling. But yeah, the Pajeski Art Gallery is certainly near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, and all related in
and
some, you know, some ways. There's that thread that comes through as executive director of the Dearborn Community Arts Council, and being able to have such an input, such a an inspiration, if I may use that, on what we're seeing at the Pajeski Gallery. We know that anything we're going to view there is going to be spectacular because it's kind of got your fingerprints on it. This one, certainly no exception, and this is a really nice kind of a collaboration of a variety of different things, and that always is interesting for families and beyond an individual to attend, maybe, you know, partners or groups or whatever the case. So I'm looking forward to having you talk a little bit about who you think is best suited to appreciate this particular event, which is relating to 11 artists that are going to be on display, opening reception tonight, so timing is perfect. But tell us a little bit about Inspired by 2.0, and what's the purpose of the title as well?
So the group is called Mary's Artists, and it's a group of mostly women that got together in some of the suburbs to practice and to fine-tune their art as artists, and life drawing was very important to them and drawing from life. So they gathered and started to do a series called Inspired By, which we exhibited at the gallery back in 2017. And the idea behind this Inspired By show is that they would take themes from literature or famous masterworks and reinterpret them with live models. So, for instance, they would take something for this show, for instance, they've got Rembrandt and Gustav Klimt and Whistler and various other artists, and they recreate not just the famous paintings, but they have an actual live model where they dress them in the costume. So there's a lot of almost like theater involved because they find the right costumes and the right lighting, and they recreate the original painting done in a setting with a live model, and then they all kind of move around and take different approaches to how they're going to interpret these themes. They even have one for this show, a theme of steampunk, and they also have the theme of the season of spring. So it's kind of a little ephemeral sometimes, but it's also very solid with its mostly referencing other classic artwork. So Inspired By 2.0 is really a reference to the fact that we had one a couple of years ago, and Inspired By, we should have had that in parentheses, Inspired By 2.0 or version 2, but it is a collection of works by Mary's Artists, which opens at the gallery tonight, and it will be starting at 6 p.m., the opening party, and it goes till about 8 p.m., and then we will continue this exhibition at the gallery through October 10th.
From part of that, is this, all right, for the opening tonight, is this sort of a performance aspect, or?
No, it's, although, you know, it's hard to say because I kind of turn it over to these wonderful, capable artists. And last time, they did have, some of the folks showed up in costume, you know, from the painting. So it was like the paintings came to life. I don't know. I haven't actually found out if they're doing that this year, but it's a fun it's a fun event all in all, because these artists will be on hand to talk about their work and how they were inspired and, you know, why they made the choices they made with these particular interpretations.
And then the works as documents are you know, on the wall until, as you say, October 10th.
October 10th, okay. At the gallery. Yep. And, yeah, there's a lot of them, too. They had to really find a way to make it all work on the, you know, we have a pretty large gallery, the Pajeski Art Gallery, located in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center there on Michigan near Greenfield, is quite capable of handling a lot of beautiful artwork. But this is one of our bigger shows that we've had in a long time. I'd say about, I mean, close to 100 pieces. And so they're having to be displayed in what they call salon style, where they're kind of on top of each other.
Floor to ceiling.
Floor to ceiling, exactly.
That's fantastic. When we talk about the idea of sort of mixing disciplines and mixing styles of art, do you find that most people find that attractive? Or do you think people have a tendency, and we're talking about art, so you can't really say most people, but is it more, I want to see all of the same thing, or I really like the variety? What do you find?
From our audience or from the artists?
From the audience perspective.
Oh, the audience is very open. I think they like a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And I think I might have gotten off track to answer your first and earlier question, Susan, was about the type of people that might be drawn to what we present at the gallery. And it really does run the gamut. It's families, it's, you know, individuals who are artists themselves, it's people who have maybe a slight interest in the arts and they want to, you know, be inspired and take it further. It's just a real strong variety. Dearborn has such a great community of art lovers, artists, art enthusiasts, art collectors, you know, people that really appreciate that there's a gallery such as ours and the many other galleries that are here in Dearborn that I'm so proud of. So I think being connected to them and being connected to the audience is important, and having something for them all on a regular basis is important as well.
And let's take the other perspective, the artist's perspective. And as you indicated, Mary's Artists did this 2 years ago, basically, and you gave us a little hint on what sort of their mission or their purpose or collaborative, you know, mindset is as it relates to the idea of sort of that sense of community. But also when we talk about painting from life, I think that, as I read somewhere, is also a really important part of this group. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I should have mentioned, too, that it's called Mary's Artists because the house where they gather is the house of one of the artists who will be on display as well. Her name is Mary Stepp. And she, along with Barbara Echo Murphy, were the originators of this concept of gathering people of all different backgrounds and different education levels and disciplines, and just having an open and welcoming space for them to do life drawing and then have these different themes. So the idea is that with life drawing, you're given, or with painting from life, you're given an opportunity to really examine how something may have been presented to the original artist. You know, you have the person in the flesh there, you have the lighting, you have the costumes, you have the whole environment that's created very effectively by these women and these men that have come together to present this. So I think that aspect of it needs to be stressed, because I think a lot of times when people see art on the walls, they might think, you know, nowadays, because art is maybe so democratic and accessible with people using their phones for everything, mm-hmm. to take pictures and to modify those pictures and to alter them, it's important for them to see somebody who's actually painting from life, and it's going directly from their brush to the canvas, from their vision, from their eyes to the brush to the canvas, and then it ends up on our walls, and it's a beautiful thing to see. It's a very direct and simplified form of expression in many ways, even though it's certainly not easy. When I say simplify, I just mean it leaves a lot of the fuss and technology out of it.
And we do need to do that once in a
while.
Don't we?
Yeah, it's like taking a deep breath and, you know, exhaling into a space where it's more tech-free and welcoming.
So at this point, you've probably seen, obviously, the works that are there. Are there any particular ones that that people who come to the gallery should look out for?
Yes.
And see?
Well, first of all, I have to say they're all outstanding. They're just, like I said, close to 100 pieces that are all grouped by the inspiration. So the Mary's Artist Group have created a card which will say, you know, Degas, and it's the A Dancer by Edgar Degas. Mm-hmm. And this was the inspiration for this group of paintings that are around the card, or as I said, Whistler or Rembrandt or Gustav Klimt or different artists. So the ones that I particularly, that stood out to me as I enjoyed walking around and looking and taking in the artwork, were the interpretations of Gustav Klimt's work, especially one that was done on metal, and it's shaped metal that's rounded and painted on, and I'm not sure how this person did it. Her name is Lynn Newman, but she did some amazing things to reinterpret this Gustav Klimt work and give it a whole new sort of environment and setting and give it a whole new life. It's metal that's rounded and shaped, but it's still very direct and literal because it's a figurative painting and interpretation, but it's more about the materials and the way that it's presented.
And just to go back to something you mentioned earlier, I'm not, looking down upon people who, access art by taking pictures on their phones and using filters and things like that. But there is a sort of like technical aspect to creating good art, whether it's oil painting, whether it's working with metal, whether it's sculpture. There is that sort of like hands-on technical aspect to it, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think, you can find art that uses technology to that way, too, that makes difficult choices or interesting choices based on the technology that's involved, whether it's photography or painting with computers and such. But this, what you're describing, is certainly something that requires a depth of skill and labor and talent to really make it work. And so that's why when you asked me about certain ones that stood out, that came to mind, because I thought that one in particular is very unique. Just to see it on the wall, kind of pulling away from the wall physically, it's an almost, definitely like a three-dimensional experience.
It's the combination of the artist's vision and their technical knowledge to actually execute it. And not to say that that's, any different than being able to do that on a computer or anything like that. But
a different skill set, though.
Yeah, right, exactly, correct.
And in some ways, maybe more traditional, and that's what's interesting to have a look back, because we can get sometimes so caught up in today's technology that we forget to look back and think about how to take a deep breath and simplify and get back to the, as I was saying earlier, just that direct going from what you see to your paintbrush or your sketchbook and your utensil, whether it's a pencil or crayon or paintbrush. So I like that there are opportunities and that the gallery is able to afford them sometimes these ways to look back and simplify.
The exhibition is called Inspired By 2.0, a collection of works by Mary's artists. The opening reception is tonight at 6 o'clock from 6 to 8 at the Pajeski Gallery in Dearborn at the Dearborn Community and Performing Arts Center, which is on Michigan Avenue, just west of Greenfield. For those certainly in the community, you probably know it well, and it will be being displayed until October 10th. Ralph Valdez is our guest on the WHFR Journal, and obviously here to talk about the exhibit. But, when we talk about art, we have this phrase called Renaissance Man. you know where I'm going with this, I think, because Ralph, a true Renaissance man, also a musician in his own right, and has been sort of like had a rebirth of a band that he was a part of several decades ago.
Yes.
You want to tell us how many years? And I just want to give you a chance to talk about the Algebra Mothers and your show coming up in Ferndale at the DIY
Radio
Festival.
I must say that he does have a little pink in his cheeks right now, so I think that's a good thing.
I'm getting a little embarrassed, and I'm very honored to be called a Renaissance man, because I never think about all the things I do. I just know I'm always busy. So the band that I was in back in the late 70s here in Detroit was called the Algebra Mothers.
And we started at Cass Tech.
We all formed at Cass Tech, and the name was based on a dream that a friend of ours had. It was more of a nightmare, but the name got shortened to A-Moms, so we are known by the Algebra Mothers and the A-Moms. We put out a single back in 1979, and it did okay, locally, and collectors liked it and such, and I did the artwork for it. I was an art student at the time.
See, I'm a few years younger. I always heard it was legendary. This was one of the essential punk singles in the Detroit
era. Let's go with that
era.
Story. Yeah, I like that story.
Got busy with other things in my life, did other things, worked here and there, and went to school in New York. And 40 years later, we find out that Third Man Records here in Detroit, Jack White and his cohorts, have discovered, or maybe they've known about it for a long time, but have asked if a couple of years ago asked if they could re-release the single. Of course, we were flattered beyond belief and honored and thrilled, and we said yes, of course. And they then asked if we had any other material that they could release. So our guitarist, who's still a lifelong friend of mine, Gerald Collins, dug up these really rough, low-fidelity tapes of recordings and put them in the hands of Third Man, who then released it as a full-length album called Algebra Mothers Equals A-Moms. Found an old, great photo of us from the 70s as a band, like probably the first photo we took as a band standing, a very Detroit-looking photo, because we're standing in front of a car on a Detroit street, and it's just got this feel on the cover, so we chose that to be the cover. And so we have been enjoying this resurgence and this rebirth of this band, the Algebra Mothers, which is more kind of punk, prog, new wave. It's hard to describe it specifically, but there was an organic diversity in the band because we were all just friends from backgrounds and met at Cass Tech. So we had, you know, African American, Mexican American, gay, straight, Greek American women. We had original drummer was Filipino. We had, you know, different folks from different walks of life coming together as friends and creating, without even meaning to, a very diverse combo. And we've held on to that spirit, even though sadly a few of the members have passed on through the years.
But I was going to ask you about that.
We've recreated the essence of the band by keeping three of the original member, or you know, being able to come back with the three original members and new people who are awesome. So we've got this energy, this revised and renewed energy. We have a show coming up.
I was going to say, since you're such a busy man, you don't perform very often, but you do have one coming up just over a week from now, right?
Yeah, on September 21st, we've been asked to perform at the Ferndale Street Fair called DIY, the DIY Art Festival or Art Fair, and it's going to be there'll be an outdoor stage at 9 Mile and Woodward. We'll be performing on Saturday, September 21st, around 6 o'clock, and then coming on after us will be the Beggars and then the legendary Gories. So the Gories was the band that really inspired Jack White and the whole White Stripes phenomenon and garage rock. So the Gories will be headlining that afternoon, that evening, Saturday, the 21st of September, where our band, the Algebra Mothers, or the A-Moms, will be taking the stage around 6 p.m. at the DIY Ferndale Art Fair.
Well, we hope for good weather. That's always the number one concern with outdoor festivals.
Sure.
But absolutely. And so, congratulations on it. We just wanted to give a little, you know, a little nod to
Thank you. Give
you have a chance to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. We appreciate it. Maybe we'll be able to come down here and play sometime.
That would be, I'm sure we could talk to Scott, and that would be a no-brainer.
We'd love that.
So from Whistler's mother to the Algebra Mothers, we have bridged
a distance today.
Really
you're
good.
Welcome. You're welcome. We are so happy to have had the chance to talk to you. Much success with not only the gig that you've got going on, we call it a gig, but the event that's kicking off tonight. And we're so excited about that. So details one more time.
So the Pajeski Gallery is located at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Our opening tonight is Inspired by 2.0. It's a collection of works by Mary's artists. It will be there at the Pajeski in Dearborn until October 10th. And we're looking forward to seeing you there. The opening is from 6 o'clock and goes till about 8 o'clock tonight, Friday, September 13th.
Ralph Valdez, my friend. I don't think there's much else to say, Susan. Let's wrap it up and congratulate ourselves on another successful edition of the WHFR Journal.
Sounds good to me. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, Kitty Love's going to be up next. Stay tuned here on the station Making Waves.
Are you a local artist? Would you like to hear your music on WHFR? Please send us your music for airplay consideration. You can find our email and physical mailing addresses at whfr.fm. Don't wait. Send your MP3s, CDs, and records today.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.